It's November 10th, 2019. This is episode 137 of Fancy Ramen. Today we cover
Toby Fox's battle theme in Pokemon Sword and Shield. I got a new project.
Scott gets a massage, if you know what I'm talking about.
There are some slight kind of spoilers for Jojo Rabbit, the Nazi movie.
I talk about Luigi's Mansion. Cookie explains Pistol Whip and Ring Fit Adventure.
We got an action-packed episode today. Please enjoy.
How about we just use that
on the intro
and then get copy struck?
Yeah, let's just get... If we ever have an episode that is particularly bad, we can always just cue up that excuse that we got hit with the cease and desist. So we put out the content, but unfortunately we can't provide it to you because our legal team, which is Cookie, says that would be an unwise decision.
Correct.
I just played like the first 8 seconds of it.
And you already know.
Tiff and I share the same opinion. It doesn't sound like Pokemon at all.
I know, but it does sound like a Toby Fox joint.
That is definitely not Pokemon.
All right. Tiff said it's a good song, but I'm not willing to make that.
I think actually it has more of the Pokemon vibe to it once you're at least like 20, 30 seconds in. Like there start to be sort of some flourishes and like structure that make it seem at least a little closer to that.
But the
instruments,
the truth,
and the tempo, and like pretty much like the primary aspects of the song absolutely would be indistinguishable from like an Undertale soundtrack like playlist. If I listened to a playlist of Undertale, I'd be like, I don't remember this song, but I'm sure it was in the game.
Yeah,
like, it would have me convinced.
It's the use of these synthesizers and like the synthesized horns that no one ever uses to make believable horns anymore, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Because they don't sound like believable horns.
It's the constant happening in the rhythm section.
How are you on rhythm with my playthrough, my playback?
Wait, was I on?
Yes,
he was.
Good job.
It's kind of weird because like I think he's a good composer, I like a lot of his music. But listening to this track makes me realize that he might be very singularly focused
as a composer. He has a niche. Yeah.
Like realizing all AC/DC does is rock anthems, that sort of thing.
But
AC/DC decided to write a song for Frozen. And then it is basically just the same thing as TNT and Dog Eat Dog and Dynamite.
Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
TNT, dun, whatever the fuck it is, I don't know.
I'm dynamite, and I'm ready to fight.
They all sound the same.
They are all the same.
That said, like he has versatility as a composer, but this song, not saying it, is technically a sort of like called in attempt. Is that the term?
Like we're phoning it in.
Yeah,
I think you want it phoning it in.
It kind of feels like it's a phoned in thing here. I mean, it's got some cool little parts to it, but it sounds
I feel like maybe he just sold a lost track. He's like, this has been sitting on my hard drive. They want me to compose something. Here you go.
Yeah, maybe. And I realize there's not a whole lot you can do in 1 minute and 13 seconds, but like Rude Buster is about that same amount of time. And that's the battle theme from Deltarune. And that's like a really good song.
Yeah.
Which uses significantly simpler voicings and synth parts.
Is everybody recording? I probably should have asked this about 4 minutes ago.
Yeah, I've been recording.
I've got 5 minutes and 22 seconds on my recording.
6 minutes cool, and so, 4 seconds. So this is all permanent.
Oh, this is all usable.
Well, it's all based off of the 4 minutes and 20 seconds that I have in. So,
oh, so we were all prepared, but you the least prepared ish. Out of all of us.
Ish, yeah. Somewhat prepared. Actually, I think that would be a pretty good definition of my like general state of being. Always somewhat prepared. Never completely off guard. Never 100% on the ball.
Well, if it's not obvious, I'm back in town. I was out for the majority of this week for work. Mm-hmm. I got sick because I was traveling and planes are filthy fucking things.
You need to stop shaking the hands of all your fans.
I need to stop licking armrests and trays, airplane trays.
I told you that wouldn't make you that much stronger.
Sorry, I don't know why I found that funny.
Yeah, what have you guys been up to?
I started a new project.
Is it the music or is it not the music?
It is the music, actually. So yesterday, I sat down for 6 hours and came up with 3 songs that I am kind of enjoying the sound of. So I'm releasing them as my six-hour EP. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to take another six hours to write and record lyrics to them. And then I'm going to take 12 hours to record 3 music videos. And it's going to be called the 24-hour Le Mans collaboration.
3 music videos?
3 music videos in 12 hours.
I mean, 1 music video in 12 hours already too much.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going for it.
After you watched, after you participated in our 24-hour film festival thing, which I don't think I sent to Scott yet.
No, I haven't gotten to see it yet.
I haven't cleaned up the audio yet on like what we were going to make a nicer presentation of it, like a more polished version of it.
Well, don't send me a mediocre product. I want full polish here.
Well, I mean, I figure you'd be fine with watching the outcome of the 24 hours of effort. Which it turned out to be fine.
Yeah.
But after witnessing that, I figured you'd probably decide not to ever attempt something like that in your life, Cookie. But
oh, this was like the 3rd or 4th time I've been called randomly in to be a dead body I think I've been shot once, stabbed once, just walking by as like a dancing extra, and then strangled once. So
is it because you're black that you've had to
mainly
keep dying on screen?
Mainly. I would have liked to see the see that cut of me walking away from him, because I was walking away way too calmly after seeing a dead body. that's what I got. That's what I got out of that. It was just, oh man, I just saw a dead body. Man, I am calm.
You're like, I don't care about this bathroom anymore. I'm going to find a new bathroom.
I felt like a video game character, just like, oh, who's that? Walk calmly away.
We don't have a model of you with a frantic face in a walking animation, so we had to recall that specific regular normal walking animation.
It happens. But yeah, no, decided to do a little more something in music. I finally officially say the door is now finished for our bathroom door.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's got a guiding roller at the bottom to keep it from knocking against the door, being like pushed out far. And mm-hmm. It now closes on center. Like it stops centered with the hole in our wall, and it only opens just enough to be a fully open door. So it's no longer just going all over the place.
A big slide along the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. That's about been my life.
It also does. It has that, it has the pressurized seal now too. So you can lock someone in with their juices, right?
Yeah. Basically, because there's only like a few millimeters clearance at the very bottom of the thing. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's real crispy. I like it.
Scott?
Let's see. This week, the most interesting thing that's happened to me is I got to experience for the first time, and due to the cost, probably for the only time in a long while, a professional full body massage. And I feel like a new man. I was treated like a slab of meat for about 90 minutes, and the number of knots that I have that I had developed in my body and my muscles was honestly terrifying to me as they each got worked out like piece by piece. But now I feel fresh and rejuvenated, and it was a spiritual experience to not feel like some gross contortion of muscle anymore.
Did they play music and burn oils or whatever?
There wasn't any oil burning, but there was that. There was the type of music that you'd find in like any like mindfulness yoga studio style thing, which I just kind of like filter out because it's just like changing the like chord progression over and over. Like, it's like just changing key slightly and then back, and so it's all the like, I don't know. It builds anticipation, then immediately resolves it, and then it does it again, and it just over and over. I don't like that kind of music very much.
I mean, I like the Minecraft soundtrack.
You're more the Lil Jon and the East Side Boys, huh?
Yeah.
You want to get that crunk music?
I mean, yeah!
There you go.
Yeah, I definitely clipped way too hard on that one.
Oh my God.
Do you think if you provided the masseuse
with my own beats,
they would play them?
So I do have the next time I go, I will have this like 24-hour project, which is three music videos over a 24-hour period. No, that would be interesting. I would be interested in like submitting that, because I think it would be fun to get massaged to like just a Tame Impala album. Like, if we're gonna go into this sort of like psychedelic trippy space, why don't we just go all the way and have some like really nice like bass lines worked in there? But it was like, I got the Hot Stones, which those are hot. Like, holy shit, there were a couple times where I was like, I think my skin might burn if this if I get any longer amount of contact time with these Hot Stones. But it was nice. It was nice overall. And at the end of it, I just wasn't ready for how hot the Hot Stones actually are.
You never are.
I was not. But yeah, no like oil infusions or anything. Just essentially like someone like cranking out all of the just like almost like tumor-like masses of muscle like contortions in my body. Like, I think, what was it? The person was telling me, like, sometimes if we encounter like a really difficult area, it's like we'll work on it and then we have to move away so the muscle can relax and we'll go back to work on it. On my like shoulders, I think they returned like 6 or 7 times total, because and it was just the same spot over and over, just like trying to loosen it up more and more. I had like literally a ball on both sides of my shoulders that they had to work out. And now I'm gonna take that and turn it into ultimate performance for tennis for the next couple of days before I completely undo all of the hard work that my masseuse put into getting me relaxed.
You know, your health insurance might actually cover trips to a massage therapist or masseuse.
Yeah, I'm sure good health insurance would do that.
Which I take it you do
no,
not have.
No, there's, yeah, I do not have good health insurance anymore. When I was working, you know, for a university and a hospital, now that was some primo health insurance, but the stuff I have now is substantially less, it's substantially lower quality than what I had previously.
Less comprehensive?
Less comprehensive is absolutely it.
Dommage.
That's about it. Yeah, I didn't, c'est dommage. But that's about all I've been up to outside of the, like, or at least in the interesting realm of non-gaming material.
Well, why don't we get into it then?
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, God, you said gaming material, so that just completely shut out my JoJo adventure that I had.
Oh, no, we should talk about that, actually. As long as you don't spoil... Well, actually, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you spoil anything for me.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 9.
Yeah. Somehow so. Takes place in the same period of time as Part 2.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that would be about that time period.
But no, well, it makes sense if you get far enough into JoJo, maybe. Scott cautiously and nervously laughs.
Because I know. It's true, though. Because I'm not there yet.
Oh.
So, yes, I went to see JoJo today. JoJo Rabbit. Not a bizarre adventure at all. Well, it was kind of a bizarre adventure. Lizzie was asking me before we went to go see this, like, what the critical reviews were for this. Is it still, like, really polarizingly split? Do we know?
I don't know exactly. I think the last time I saw Rotten Tomatoes number on it, it was, like, close to 80% or something. Which isn't, I mean, that's not necessarily critical reviews, right? Because Rotten Tomatoes does have...
Okay, 79% tomato meter, audience is 97%.
It might be pertinent to like summarize or give us a good summary of what this movie is, because when I look at the box art or the movie poster for it, it looks like a Wes Anderson film.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a Wes Anderson film, but not. So you are following a 10-year-old boy named JoJo throughout the. It spans about half a year, the last little bit of the World War II. Yeah, that was the Germany one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, both World Wars actually had Germany involved in them, but...
worlds. But anyway, so you're following a little boy throughout his summer in the last years of World War II, and he is your idealistic Nazi kid. Everything is Hail Hitler. His imaginary friend is just a reincarnation of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Or not reincarnation, but conceptualization.
Oh, thank you. A conceptualization of Hitler. And he has a Jew living in his attic. And the very beginning kind of really does play up that whole, like... So they're always talking about, like, oh, man... What can Jews do? And they're like saying they can read minds and hypnotize people and they drink blood and like all these like horror stories of Jews are basically vampires for whatever reason.
I was going to say that sounds like vampires. Yeah.
And so when he discovers the chick living in his attic, or I guess it's a crawl space in his deceased sister's room, he like it really has like... really has like horrific elements there. Mm-hmm. The interaction between the two kids, the Jewish chick and the main character, the interaction is very like tense, and the movie is funny and sad all at the same time. Like it's basically following the outcasts. So they're just normal people living their life. The son is a fanatic. The mother obviously is a sympathizer, i.e. hiding a Jewish teenager in her home at the height of the revolution. But JoJo is... he's a good kid. And his friend, I forget what his friend's name was called. He's like a little fat kid. Their interactions are just hilarious. Like sometimes just due to what's being said and what's being talked about, you kind of forget that, oh yeah, they're kids. And then you see you see those two friends interact with each other. It's like at the very, towards like the very end of the movie, it's like the friend's like, ah, it's a bad time to be a Nazi. I'm going to go home. I need a cuddle. It is just like, oh, that's great. The art direction for some of the shots was phenomenal. Not giving much away, I guess, but like it kind of felt, who's the guy who's really obsessed with feet? It's Tarantino, feet? Right?
Oh, that's Tarantino. Yeah.
Yeah. So it had like this thing, like,
so lots of foot shots, huh?
Pretty much every shot that introduced JoJo's mom, played by Scarlett Johansson, was of her shoes.
Hmm.
So it'd be like, hey, these are her feet. These are the shoes that she's wearing. Then it'd be like, hey, remember cute shoes she was wearing? Mm-hmm. She's still wearing those shoes. Cool. JoJo can't tie his shoes is like a big thing. So by the end of the movie, of course, he now can tie shoes.
But that's the big character development, is him not like rejecting Nazi propaganda, but instead learning how to tie a shoelace.
Yes, very much so. But yeah, no, it's a great movie. There's some things of like, oh no, they're going to get caught. And then they don't. And you find out that people are like allies, but maybe they're not allies. So you can't really tell judge a book by its cover. Even though that cover was incredibly gay. The cover was incredibly gay.
This is, you're not spoiling anything for me, but honestly, you are like actively confusing me as to what,
yeah,
what the plot of the movie is at all.
So I don't get it. Is his imaginary friend version of Hitler his stand?
Yes. at points, his stand does interact with the world, if that makes you feel better. So, synopsis of the movie is, you are following a boy through a coming-of-age story in the middle of Nazi Germany who just wants to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And things take a turn for the nice in a very sad way.
Hmm.
All I can say, slight spoilers, Hitler shoots himself in the head.
Oh, well, I
mean, I didn't know that. What? I thought he was in Venezuela.
Yeah, are you telling me they lose?
Oh, don't worry. He comes back to life with a bullet wound in his head. Hence the him being a stand, so it's fine.
Interesting.
Rebel and Mark spoilers, just in case.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want spoilers, I can tell you about some, like, the conversations.
I don't want spoilers. I'm going to watch it.
All I can say is the conversations between the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Are just brilliant. When Hitler's talking to the kid, it's like one of the gags is he offers him a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And JoJo's like, I'm 10, I don't smoke. And then like stressful things happen. So Hitler keeps offering him cigarettes. And he's like, why are you still offering me cigarettes? And it's just like, what do we do? And it just sounds like natural conversations. Like,
mm-hmm.
It felt as if the guy who was playing Hitler literally was just like, the kid was just literally thrust into a situation giving natural dialogue, and then him and Hitler would have just like a conversation recap.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like exactly what would be said by a 10-year-old at that time.
Okay.
Or at least what would be going on in a 10-year-old's mind.
Right, and so Taika Waititi, who is the director and is playing like Hitler. The imaginary friend Hitler, yeah, he is like in these scenes with JoJo's character, like he's embodying the concept of Hitler to 10-year-old JoJo, who's been indoctrinated by like the Hitler Youth movement.
Yeah,
so yeah, he's not actually like serious, mean, literally like Hitler. Hyped up on amphetamines Hitler that we know of like historical context, but he's 10-year-old's concept of fun and goofy and slightly erratic Hitler.
Very much so, as one of the scenes for the, like, that was in the actual trailer was mm-hmm. after they see the Jew girl, they're like, what do we do? The boy is like, we should negotiate. And Hitler says, we should burn down the house and blame Winston Churchill.
Mm.
Or negotiate. That's fine. That also works too. But nah, it's, if you need to, if you're going to go see that, I highly suggest you see the movie. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie that I may end up just owning just to further support that movie. I'm very picky about the movies that I actually buy because
mm-hmm.
I know I'm not going to watch them ever and they'll all end up on Netflix anyway. But this one definitely deserves a little more money out of me.
Well, I'm a big fan of Taika Waititi. I haven't seen a movie I haven't enjoyed of his yet. If you haven't seen it and you like this, you should check out Hunt for the Wilder People. That's a very good mm-hmm. one. It's another pseudo coming of age story. Like, essentially, it's about a troubled boy who gets adopted by a family that lives like on the outskirts of the bush in New Zealand. And it's like his, I guess it's like his development in the coming of age story, but also his like fostering a relationship with this very grouchy and like disinterested old man who is one of his caretakers, who is one of his guardians, I guess. Very, very fun and interesting movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, he did the Thor movies? Cool.
He did Ragnarok. I think that's the only one. And he actually, the little rock monster or the stone guy in Thor Ragnarok is voiced by him.
Oh, that makes total sense. He's also going to be doing,
very funny.
He's going to be doing the next one as well. He did Eagle versus Shark. Nice.
He's the most preeminent Kiwi director, I believe.
Nope, I like it. God, I need to like find these costumes for Eagle versus Shark and dress up with Lizzie. Great movie. Anyway, nope, I like it. I really enjoyed the movie. Matter of fact, everything I've seen by him I've really liked, which is Eagle versus Shark. I never saw Green Lantern, so you know, I get to skip that. Thor, Ragnarok, and Jojo Rabbit so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Neil, did you get any gaming done while you were on your long hiatus from the pod?
Not really. I worked an awful lot.
Oh, no need to brag.
So much work. But outside of that, counting the time I was back in Omaha, I've played a lot more, or a little... Actually, I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast at all to begin with, but I've been playing Luigi's Mansion.
Ooh, how is
the third one?
Yes, the new third one. So I've never played the first two, so take that into consideration. But I'm enjoying it so far. To really quickly point out, there are a few things that like jumped out at me that were
like ghosts and other
and some other jump scares,
spooky characters. Yeah.
Now there are a few like bad things that I want to point out. Maybe because it's easier to point them out than highlight all of the good things, if that's mm-hmm. you know, a sign of how much I'm enjoying the game. Some of the load times are pretty obvious, and it mostly goes with being in the elevator and changing floors. I know it's kind of maybe expecting like better performance out of this game that looks really nice, but is on a Switch. But going from floor like 8 to 7 or 7 to 6 just sometimes feels like it's taking too long, and that's definitely covering up for load times, loading in the new environment and so mm-hmm. forth.
How often are you switching from floors too? Is it something that it's like you're kind of spending a decent amount of time on each floor, or is it really forcing you to like
navigate multiple levels? Are you trying to get from floor to 7 to 2 all at once?
Well, so, I don't think that would matter on the loading, right?
Yeah. Sorry. It won't matter if you go from the first floor to the top floor, as far as I can tell, or at least the top available floor.
Okay.
It really hasn't been a problem until this last bit we were playing. We actually had a point where we needed to go down a floor to catch an apparition that had gone through the floor in order to escape us. But usually the game does a good job of keeping all of its play, like all of its like chapter on one floor, So there's generally not a whole lot of load, like off-screen load time, we'll say, that occurs when you're playing the game. And usually, like, each floor tends to, each quote-unquote floor, there can tend to be levels within that floor, or, like, floors within that floor, if that makes sense. But it generally does a good job of keeping you on one floor. So that means really minimizing the impact that loading has on a current play, like a current play session. But that did come up this last floor we were on. We had to go to the one below it. And I think that's the only reason why it really stood out to me so much. The controls are also kind of interesting, and at least from what I could tell, it's a two-player game. Tiffany and I are both playing it, and I believe we both have to use the same control scheme. And I think the control scheme is maybe not 100% intuitive, in that it feels almost like you're using tank controls when you're using the vacuum or any of your tools.
And that, I think, is a carryover from even the original game. I've played just a little bit of the original Luigi's Mansion, and I remember using the Poltergust, I think is what they call it. It is like, it is definitely in that like tank control type of control scheme, and I did not like it very much. Or I found it uncomfortable at first. I don't know if it gets easier over time.
Regardless of what tool you're using, if you're using a tool and you raise or lower your controller or tilt the controller up or down, that controls the vertical movement of the tool, regardless of what control schematic you have. But you cannot control it on a horizontal scale, like left or right, and however you move the controller. So it kind of reminds me of Splatoon in that regard, but only in terms of motion controls.
Do you like the sensitivity of the motion controls as they exist?
It seems fine. I don't think there's a way to adjust it, but I don't think you would need to adjust it. And really, when you get down to it, like, you basically only need three directions, vertically speaking, that that you'd use your tools in. Like, level, up and
or
down
angle.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, you obviously can go in between those. It's like a fluid motion, but I don't think there's ever a point in time that you would need to not be all the way up and not be level.
Right. Up max and down max are the same as like 45 degree angle between down and level, right?
Exactly. And based on the flashlight's angle of use or the suction's angle of use, like, there's really no problem with being slightly off from max up or down at that matter. Like, it's always going to, there's a lot of forgiveness based upon the direction that you are using your tools. But what I think gets me about the controls is, at least when you're playing in two-player, where sometimes the focus of the camera is not going to be as close to your character because you're in two-player mode, it can be kind of hard to see exactly what direction you're in if you're facing the left or the right. You might just be, based off of your flashlight or the suction animation, think that you're maybe 30 degrees off from direct left or direct right, but you can't always tell if you're aiming in the foreground or background, and that can sometimes make the tank controls a little trickier. But I also think that if you're someone that doesn't use motion controls, that if you're in the more arcadey control scheme, it can be kind of hard to force yourself to use the motion controls to aim up and down, because otherwise in that control scheme you wouldn't have that option. But at the same time, I do want to like praise the game, because that strafe or lack of strafe button, or not strafe button if you will, enables you to actually do a lot of small fine movements, where if you can't tell in what direction you're currently facing, you can always use the non-strafe button combination or lack of to move in the direction that you know you need to be facing, and that can save you a lot there. So even my criticisms of the controls are actually kind of more a highlight of how the control scheme actually enables you to find your way to play the game better. Puzzles are always like pretty logical, but there can sometimes be a few tricky things that if you're not looking at it in the right way or you're not using the right tool, it can kind of stump you for a bit, but I kind of find that as like a nice positive. I don't think we've ever hit something that we just couldn't figure out ever. And even then, like, even if there are things that you've missed, there are ways that you can use the in-game currency. I feel like it's a shame that I have to specify in-game currency as opposed to microtransactions. Using like the coins that you find in the game, you can purchase essentially like radar charges to find hidden items or hidden other collectibles that I won't really get into here. And overall, like, pretty fun.
So you can like buy hints, essentially?
More or less. At least it seems like you're buying charges. Like, so you have to find gems, which the gems change based on what the floor is and what their theme is.
Okay.
So I think there are 6 gems per floor. And if you can't seem to find, if you're having troubles finding a gem, you buy, I think, what is called like a gem radar or something like that. And it automatically marks the gems that you've missed so far. And I think you need to buy a given number of gem radars or whatever the actual item is called in order to have more than one gem show up on your map.
Okay. So one more question. Are they using the gem radar? Like, when you use the gem radar on the occasions that you've had to, do you ever feel like after it reveals or like gives you that hint or suggestion that your internal response has been like, oh, okay, or that makes sense, and not in the realm of like, if I didn't have this radar, I would have never found that, or like, this was impossible without the use of this item?
So I might be wrong with what the item name is called, because I'm going to say that it's not something you actually end up using. It's just done automatically and it shows up on your map.
Okay.
But to answer your second question, I think most of the time it's only just given us an idea of like, we need to look a little closer, at this room.
Okay, I like that.
The one instance that sticks out to me is one of the first rooms. And it was a type of situation where there's no way we would have found it without knowing that there was something we needed to do in this room. But luckily, after playing the game far enough in and learning new mechanics, getting that radar, we returned to this room, and after maybe like 5 minutes of hunting around, we figured out through the use of the mechanics we were taught later on in the game how we could reveal a crystal that we otherwise would not have had the knowledge to get.
Oh, I really like that. Actually.
So I don't want to talk it up too much because I think it's one of those circumstances where we just happen to play the game the way that the creators or the developers like wanted you to play the game.
Right.
And the game is open enough that if you hadn't have done this, you might have figured it out just by brute forcing your way through it or whatever the case may have been. Not to say the game's like non-linear. I think there is a very specific path you go, but the collectibles, the point in time at which you get the collectibles is entirely up to you. You could do it right at the start. You could do what you can find and then move on and then go back to them later, or you could skip everything and come back to it later.
Oh, well, it reminds me a little bit like that's the format of Metroidvanias that I like a lot for the collectibles or bonus items, or even just like items or currency that doesn't have as much value or use until late game, like learning tricks or acquiring new techniques or items to activate or access it. But for advanced players, someone going back through on a second playthrough, like there's accessibility to it well before maybe the developer intended interaction.
So I have a question. For second player, are they using Guiji?
Yes.
Does Guiji show up in cutscenes?
Depends on the cutscene. If there's a reason for Guiji to be there, then yes. But sometimes Guiji will always technically show up because Guiji goes back into Luigi's backpack thing, his vacuum, his Kerbal vacuum. So technically, you're always visible. It's just a matter of, like, there are certain cutscenes that required you to use Guiji to complete something. And in that case, Guiji will absolutely be present.
Otherwise, Guiji goes in the backpack. But at least Guiji doesn't mystically disappear.
Right. At least not... I mean, it never has really stood out that much to me. And to be honest, your focus on the game in the cutscenes, I don't think is hardly ever on Guiji or Luigi unless they want you to look at him. This kind of gets me to my next point of praise for the game, and that is that, and maybe this is par for the course, I should say, but like, as someone that really appreciates character building and development and narrative and story, it always amazes me when I play like a game that you can tell the Nintendo development team put a lot of time and effort in polishing, because there's basically zero dialogue. I mean, there is dialogue, but there are scenes where there is zero dialogue for like 15 minutes, and yet you get so much depth and detail and impression, I should say, of what a character is just based upon the animation, the character designs, the movements, the implied or like the actions of the fight or whatever, the encounter. And I think that maybe Luigi's Mansion has like a leg up because it's such a cool setting compared to like other Nintendo games. But I feel like this is a golden example of Nintendo storytelling, and it's like at its best.
Nice. And it's, yeah, this is a case in which it's not just environmental, but your idle animations are even giving you context.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. That's something you don't get. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to ask if it was a couch co-op must have in a sea of not very many couch co-op games.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good like cross between fun co-op gameplay and a story or something you can watch together. It's not like the story is super complex or anything. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, you know, this is going to be the second coming of Steins Gate. It's just like an enjoyable little experience where you can root for Luigi, the underdog. You get to see his ghost dog, which I don't know which game. Apparently Luigi's Mansion 2, because yeah, he's not in the first one. And you just get to kind of see like all of these interesting ghost entities that you meet and their behaviors and, I guess, like the little stories you get from each one as you play the game. So, you know, let's say Overcooked. That's a really fun co-op game, I'd say. Overcooked is maybe like a better co-op experience in terms of the cooperation involved to get through levels and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Luigi's Mansion is like way more chill, and you get like a fun, interesting story.
Final Guiji question, or at least on my end. He's made of goo, and he's supposed to, like, somewhat replicate Luigi's a bit. Like, he has the same, I assume, like, movement and basic toolkit as Luigi, but obviously some, like, there's some distinct differences, right? I've seen the trailers where he can, like, walk through bars or do other slimy, gooey things. How does his vacuum work? Because he has a vacuum, too, right? Or he has a... Vacuum. Does that actually have suction, or does it shoot goo in a stream? Like, I don't understand how he has suction with it.
It's basically the exact same thing. As you allude to, there are things that Guiji can do differently, or that he responds to differently. It seems to be a lot of give and take. There's pros and cons to Guiji. You can go through bars and vents and stuff like that, and that's required to get through certain puzzles.
Right.
You can go through drains and anything that liquids could do, but you can't use most ladders or other certain obstacles that Luigi can use, because you would just phase through the ladder. And likewise, right, if there's like a catwalk or like a vented walk path or something, Guiji can't move over that catwalk. He'll just slide through it.
So to move him, you have to, if you're player one and player two is Guiji, you have to pick up player two, essentially.
Yeah, you'd have to go back into the backpack or back into his vacuum and then tread across.
Who initiates that? Is it like, I'm thinking Super Mario Bros. U, where you can pick up a character and throw them in a hole? Or even like Yoshi's, I think it's Yoshi's, it's not Epic Yarn, that's Kirby's Epic Yarn, but Yoshi's Woolly World, where you can eat a Yoshi and lay an egg of them and then like throw them into a pit. I know I'm talking about all the terrible things I've done in Mario Co-op, but is it...
Oh, don't worry. Neil does those same things.
Is it player two's, like, is it their consent, or are they just getting gooped, like, sucked back into the backpack at any point in time that player one decides they want to do that?
It's only in the control of Guiji when they want to leave the backpack or go into the backpack or whatever you want to call it, the goo chamber. And on that point, like, there's very little
his ego
that the two players can do to each other to interrupt each other. Like, the only thing you can really do is flash the other with a flashlight, and that can interrupt certain actions. But generally speaking, like, it has to be pretty unlucky to find yourself doing that.
Right. It's definitely developed in which cooperation towards a goal is 95% of the interactions.
Right.
Okay. Guiji also has a flashlight?
Yes. It's part of the
bioluminescent
vacuum.
Okay.
I don't ask questions about how it works.
I've got a problem with all this goo doing stuff it shouldn't.
And I should also note that Guiji also has like a much lower health bar.
Ah.
So 25 HP instead of 99. Oh. But if Guiji loses it, Guiji just has to wait like for a very low cooldown before coming back out from the goo compartment backpack thing. So there's not really like...
But
I don't think there's ever a situation where one is better than the other. Or there's never an overall consensus that one character is better than the other. There's only situations.
There's a fair balance. Does that mean that a copy of Guiji is the same as the original Guiji? If I take one piece of goo and exchange it with a new piece of goo, after I've traded out every piece of goo, is that the same Guiji?
I don't think Guiji has an identity to begin with, though. Because like there will be points.
He has a name, and
where...
you're saying he has a personality. What more do you want?
It's just that, like, the one thing you'll know is that I could open up... So I'm playing as Guiji. I could open up a cupboard that then has a jump scare on it. And the jump scare will affect Luigi all the way across the room. But Guiji is unfazed. Like, I don't think Guiji...
Guiji's just got ice in his veins.
So
Guiji's like, it's fine.
Stone Cold Killer.
So I understand the idea of, like, anything that has a name has an identity. I guess we're not getting... Oh, this doesn't necessarily conflict with the ship question. I can't remember that.
Yeah, I forget the name. I think it's Odysseus's ship is the philosophical quandary that I posed against you. Which is unfair, but it was fun.
I guess the only retort is that when you die as Guiji, it's not like the goo is disintegrating or being destroyed. It just returns back to the backpack.
Okay, so it really just loses its like corporeal form for a moment.
It just reaches a viscosity that is no longer able to maintain a human shape.
I'm
enjoying it.
Okay.
And in fact... I'm enjoying it so much. I didn't play Death Stranding yesterday, so
I mean,
I'm proud of you.
Yeah, you've actually pitched this quite well. I may pick it up for Sierra and I to play. We haven't played a good cooperative game since Portal 2 allows you to, like, if you don't cooperate well, just slay your partner over and over into, you know, puddles of water or crush them with spikes and whatnot. And so. Took a toll on our relationship, and it sounds like there's a lot less like a lot less flexibility for fuckery between two people, which makes it the perfect co-op game for us. One with very, like, very hard-built constraints to prevent griefing.
Tiff did point out that I constantly shoot a plunger onto Luigi's head, onto her head. So, but there's nothing detrimental about that behavior.
Are you satisfied with playing Gooigi? That means I think, right, that Tiff is technically taking the, like, the first player or the the, like, more commanding character space, right? For, like, she's taking the primary role, and Gooigi, although obviously an essential portion, like, I think it's fair to argue from the context we have now, like, you're playing a secondary role for sure, but it feels very satisfying still.
Yeah, for sure. There are bosses that would require you as a single player to use Gooigi specifically, and vice versa. There are bosses, at least there has been one specific boss where part of me was just thinking, like, I think this would be much easier if I just went back
Luigi
into the backpack. Yeah, because of a variety of things. But
Okay.
So I can't say for sure yet, since I'm guessing we're probably maybe halfway through the game, if not even that far. But it seems like we have 4 people to save out of 5. So, like, it feels like we've made a lot of progress based upon the floors, but of the 5 main objectives, which is to save 5 people, we have only saved 1. So I could be wrong. We could be halfway, or we given by the number of floors that we have explored, or we could be like 20% of the way through this game.
It's difficult to tell with some of those, right? Like the Metroid Prime games, you've discovered all but, like, say, one area with like 25 or 30% of the game completed on some of them. But then all of the backtracking and, like, additional navigation through these areas, you find extra stuff. Like, when you get your map, is it you're filling in, like, room by room, or you just get, like, an overview? Or are we talking about, like, the map is complete but skeletal, or, like, empty until you fill it in through access? Like, do you know how much is remaining of the areas? And have you ever discovered anything that's, like, it wouldn't show up, say, in the blueprints or the map of the game because it's a secret or, like, hidden area or passage?
I actually don't remember, Tiff. So basically it's like you'll have... Wait, are you playing it without me right now?
Well, you are the secondary role.
Yeah.
Oh, she's getting some gems we didn't get. Okay, so the map essentially is what you would find in a hotel floor plan, if you want to think of it that way.
Okay.
Gives you all, like, all of the main rooms and stuff, but that doesn't necessarily tell you if there are secret rooms. So,
like that?
Take that for what it's worth. You will be given essentially all of the information, all of the layout information, as well as, like, where doors are, and you'll get things like what's not accessible or what's accessible. But you won't always have information regarding secret paths or secret rooms or compartments.
Okay, I like that.
Just in case, so you can't memorize the map. I don't want any spoilers for you.
Oh, we're past that point.
Right.
Now, that said, I would say that this is maybe speculation, but I have a feeling this game might actually get relatively difficult if you were just playing by yourself.
Yeah.
Partly because of some of the battles and bosses where you have to rely on Gooigi. Like, without giving spoilers or anything like that, you basically have to put Luigi in position, in vulnerable positions, and then use Gooigi to, like, get an
counterattack. Okay.
But the very nature of that implies that you need to be comfortable enough switching between the two characters, and I'm not sure necessarily if that's very easy, given that we've never been switching. You know, we're constantly two bodies. So it's an interesting thought. I don't necessarily want to, like, make you feel like this is a masterpiece, but I think I went in with, like, reasonably realistic expectations of the game, and the game has been able to exceed those thus far.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't name too many Nintendo games I've played that I've ever been disappointed with by the end of. Normally the Nintendo like IPs are kind of a seal or stamp of approval that I'm satisfied with, as long as it's not a Donkey Kong game. And that's just because I can never get to the end.
We could make a whole episode about why I have never been a fan of Donkey Kong.
Because it's too damn hard.
I don't even think it's too hard.
Okay, go back and play Donkey Kong Country for me and then tell me it's not too damn hard. The only way I beat that game is when the Super Nintendo Classic came out and you could essentially rewind after all of your deaths.
This is all assuming...
cheapest fucking game I've ever played. I mean,
the biggest problem with Donkey Kong is that the hitboxes are so...
Huge,
but not. It's like... It's really hard to know what is part of the hitbox and what isn't. And I think the game would be easier if they just removed the graphics and showed you colored bitmaps.
No, honestly, I get it. Yeah, my blue rectangle would give me way more information than look at Donkey Kong's sprint animation.
And their jump animations are so inconclusive too. Is the flailing arm part of my hitbox?
Well, this time it is, but that last time it wasn't.
Right, and that's kind of why I feel like a lot of people... It's that and the momentum of Donkey Kong's movement that
feels... Are you saying gorillas are not graceful enough for you?
I honestly, I think it's easy enough to get used to, but if you're used to playing Mario and games... there is a certain degree of platformer momentum that has become the universal acceptance, and Donkey Kong doesn't follow it, and Donkey Kong just doesn't feel good most of the time. We don't need to make this its own thing. Moving on, what have you guys been up to?
Well, I've been playing two new games. One is a game that I've been whipping people into shape. Did I actually talk about this on the podcast last week, Scott?
Is this Ring Fit?
Yeah, if we're talking about Ring Fit, this is the first time.
No. Me whipping other people into shape, i.e. pistol whip.
Oh, I don't actually think you spoke about it on the podcast last time either. I'm almost certain that was private convo.
Cool. So Pistol Whip is a game on... No, I did not talk about Pistol Whip. So Pistol Whip, VR game, it's the thing that's supposed to... At least people are starting to tote that it is the next best game in VR, i.e. Beat Saber, that everyone should play. And my God, yes. It is so much fun. It puts you in the middle of an action sequence of just shooting people and beating them with a pistol to the beat. And it is spectacular. I can say that I do have some pretty good VR legs, so I don't get motion sick a lot from things passing by. But there was a game called Rhythm Rider that just recently came out, or Rhythm something, where you had to basically feel the beat and match your hands up with some dotted locations. But everything was kind of coming at you too fast, and it was just okay, this makes me very nauseous. Refund. Pistol Whip found the perfect amount of speed for things for you moving through the world. So things coming at you, i.e. Beat Saber, that's not bad. Being inside of a cockpit really does help, having a thing that's constant. But the way that Pistol Whip moves you through the world feels completely natural. So you are using your full body to not only aim to shoot people, but you're also going to be having to duck out of the way of bullets. You're dodging pillars that are going to be in your way. So you're dodging left and right and ducking. And it is great. The shooting mechanics feel nice. I did get to try it without the aim assist on. And my God, that makes it so much harder. The aim assist is a godsend. It's a very forgiving aim assist, to where the game kind of scores you in a couple of different ways. You get 100 points just for shooting a person. You get 100 points for shooting a person on beat. So you get 200 points, basically. Now, with the aim assist on, those amount of points that you get are going to be lessened by how much the aim assist actually had to help you. So I've gotten as little as like 3 points, basically, because it's like, I wasn't really aiming at him, but you shot him anyway, and it's fine. I'll take it. He's dead. He's not shooting at me anymore. Because in every level, like, you get two consecutive hits of being shot, and then that ends the run for you. Otherwise, you can shoot like six or seven guys, or pistol whip six or seven guys, and then your armor will come back.
Right. Yeah. Your body has pushed those bullets out of itself. It's ready for another round.
But it definitely makes you feel like a certified badass, just like listening to the thumping music, constantly having your gun up in front of you, and just looking for that little bit of movement from that enemy coming around the corner. Because as soon as you see him, you shoot him, and it's great. So that's just been me pistol whipping people into shape. And then I also did, pick up Ring Fit Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
With
Where's your ring?
It's right here.
Okay.
The actual ring con is, it's got a nice rubberized, I don't know how this thing works. It's magic, though, but it's basically a somewhat pliable plastic that connects to your Joy-Con, and it can measure how hard you're pushing it in or how far you're pulling it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't gotten any further than when I was talking with you privately, Scott, but the exercises they're having you do kicked my ass for like the very first thing. So my very first session was just a 10-minute exercise thing. You are constantly jogging and are running to actually move. So there's a Joy-Con strapped to your leg and a Joy-Con in the ring. So to move forward, you quite literally have to move your legs. And it is not going to take just some wimpy, like, I kind of just barely move my legs to go. You actually need to like jog in place. And to climb stairs, yes, your knees are going to have to get higher than you actually think they need to be.
Have you tried to fool the game at all?
I have not tried to fool the game at all, but I will tell you, about halfway through fighting the like boss of the first like workout level session,
you were tempted to?
I was definitely tempted to, because it was just like, I don't want to do any more squats. These fucking... Oh my God, I'm so tired. My legs felt like jello.
Can you squeeze that ring again for me?
Yeah.
You are squeezing it so much.
Yeah, it's his fists are connecting. They've covered the... What would you say? That ring is about a foot in diameter? I think so.
Yes. It's a good amount of resistance.
I mean, we can definitely tell for listeners who can't see it, when Cookie goes to squish the ring together, first off, he's making the "I'm definitely putting effort in here" face, but you can see that his hands like can't keep a completely even grip. They're slipping. Yeah, he's gonna punch himself in the
face. He's gonna break it.
I don't think I can break this thing. Like, so one of the things you have to do to block a move is do an ab press. So you hold the ring con sideways and you press it against your abs. So that I can obviously get more leverage on.
Your abs of steel are how you defend yourself. Ah.
So yeah, no, this thing can completely touch itself and it is just fine.
Huh.
I'm really impressed at the like with seeing someone actually manipulate the materials who's not doing it for an ad.
Yeah, because the ads all show people like bending it maybe inches at that. Bending it together inches, pulling it apart like inches. Okay. Insignificant amounts of
I need to take
distance.
Off my jacket.
Guys, he's already gotten sweaty. The Ring Fit's doing its job even when it's not connected to the Switch.
Oh my god, I'm glistening. But nah, so yeah, it really, really works you out. So since you have a Joy-Con on your thigh, one of the things, the exercise that I have unlocked are the overhead press, which is you hold the Ring Con above your head and you squeeze it in to work
your upper pectorals,
and then you let it go.
Lats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you've got which that one's not that bad, but it's got a one thing cooldown, so you can't just constantly keep doing that. Then you've got the squats. And since you have a Joy-Con that's been calibrated on your leg, it knows that you're not squatting. It knows. And it's like, nope, get a little lower. Get low. Yeah, there you go. Okay, now release.
Where on the thigh is it?
It's mid-thigh, right?
It's about halfway between your, like, halfway up, a little bit higher than halfway up after your knee, between your, yeah. And so they're like, get a little bit lower. It's fine. Then they've got the chair pose, which that was the one I kind of was tempted to cheese by actually just sitting in a chair. But you have to, like, you have to do the squat as if you are sitting on a chair, and then you have the ring above your head, and then it measures how quickly or slowly you bring the ring down and put the ring up while in that ridiculous pose. And it hurts. And then they've got the knees to chest, which is you laying on the ground and actually, like,
okay, so
hiking your legs up.
What is there actually a story?
So
that's not like a throwaway. The Ring Fit Kingdom has been attacked by the sloth demons, and you have to.
No. So you are a stranger who sees who hears a ring call out to you to break it. Mm-hmm. The ring is like, set me free. The whole kingdom could be in danger and you'd never know. You should set me free. So you pull on the ring con as hard as you possibly can, and then it breaks the seal. And you release this muscle-bound demon who is very angry at being trapped in the ring for so long. And it turns out, from what I found out, the demon is all about working out and being buff and strong, but he's so into it, he puts out negative energy into the world. He's a toxic gym bro. So his workout buddy, who was actually the ring, who is now your workout buddy, was like, I'm not strong enough to seal him in anymore. I'm going to need your help. But we need to be in sync in order to seal his negative powers away. And the only way to get in sync is to exercise together.
Your BMI is still around 20%. I don't think we're in sync enough.
So I do know that apparently you get to buy and create different kind of smoothies as power-ups, but I haven't gotten that far yet.
Mm.
But yeah, so basically you got a toxic gym bro who's been released onto the world, causing toxicity around the world by being extra buff and making people not want to, I guess, maybe they all want to be buff. Maybe they don't want to just be like him because he's just the annoying gym bro. But yeah, so it's up to you and your ring, I forget what the ring's name is, but you and the ring, who is your workout buddy, to go ahead and slap that gym bro into submission and resale him back up. He was complaining about, like, he's like, oh man, back when you were my partner, you used to say, if you don't work out every day, yada yada yada, but man, you kept me locked in there for so long, I'm so weak now, what's up with that, bro?
Is there a customization for your Ring Fit avatar, or do you have to play fiery ponytail lady or fiery hair dude?
So there is a customization to your avatar, but you are going to be fiery head.
right. But you don't have to be fiery ponytail white woman, fiery hair white guy, right?
Nah, I'm fiery hair black guy.
Nice. Okay.
But yeah,
is there ever a point where they bring Sonic in? Because I feel like there's some obvious tie-in that they could have done.
You for a running training.
That and the infatuation with rings here.
No, that'd be great. Honestly, God, that'd be a great character. Maybe, who knows? I doubt it. Actually, Sonic Sega.
Sega's not owned, Sega's, but kind of
basically owned by Nintendo.
Sega's now like Nintendo's little brother.
Yeah. Except when it comes to like Atlas shit, some of their. Well, no, I guess Sega just publishes Atlas's stuff.
They do. Oh yeah, I guess you're right. They do. But no, this game is I've heard from like reviewers that it is a nice light workout. I've heard from like my thing into actually buying this. One of my friends who no longer lives in Omaha, like, posted on Facebook. He's like, man, I did the intro level and fuck me.
He got too fit for the city and he had to leave.
You're telling me the GameSpot employees that have their own personal gym and like company provided trainers are not finding Ring Fit Adventures to be that excruciating? And then typical Joes that probably play more video games than do physical activity are having a tougher time with it?
What? Oh my God.
No, I'm actually kind of curious about it now.
No, it's a good workout. I think Lizzie was actually at book club for my first like workout set. Mm-hmm. So besides like having...
She didn't hear all the crying.
Besides having the resistance loop. But I'm thinking we can probably like simulate that somehow. She said she wants to join me because a lot of the things that we're doing, that I'm doing literally are just squats and leg lifts. So, and she can run in place with me and that's no problem. But no, it's a good workout. There's a YouTube video of this guy trying to literally speed run it.
I love that concept, honestly.
I'm curious about it from the standpoint of like, I'm probably in the worst shape I've ever been in my life.
And you eat, is that a cookie or a cracker?
This is a ginger snap. Okay, this is a ginger snap cookie, all right? So I'm curious.
Munch.
I'm definitely at my highest weight, my heaviest, and it, like my worst shape.
Right, your largest internalized ginger snap.
I am the biggest gingerbread man ever that I have ever been. So I'm curious if this could actually like promote me to get back into better exercise habits. Like, but I think one of the big things that would be a driving point for me is if I can actually enjoy the story within the game.
I find that like hard to believe, but I haven't seen it.
It's not like it has to be. It doesn't have to be a masterpiece. Like Luigi's Mansion 3 is by no means a complex story, but it's still very enjoyable.
Yeah, you still like it.
Every Miyazaki movie is really not that complex when you think about it.
Like, but you still like it.
Well, not every Miyazaki movie, but like a lot of Miyazaki or Studio Ghibli movies are not that complex. Kiki's Delivery Service is, hey, I'm a little girl witch. I'm delivering packages. Oh, I like this boy and now he's falling.
God damn it. I am going to like Death Stranding, aren't I? Fuck.
I love Kiki's
Delivery Service.
Okay, quick aside. I've heard a lot of polarizing things about the game, or I've heard that a lot of people don't like the game. But I think people have taken on a very unrealistic expectation for what Death Stranding was going to be. And I think the same people, for the same reason that a bunch of people got really upset over what Metal Gear Solid 5 turned out to be, which was like a kind of incomplete game that was all about like open world infiltration and not much more.
Yeah, it was much more mechanically like dense than, say, Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right.
Like, you could totally say that if you look at the distribution of effort, there's way more distribution to the story and cutscenes in 4, and that amount of, like, time or development went into interactivity in Metal Gear Solid 5.
And it could be the exact opposite in this game. I have a feeling this is going to be a return to MGS4's, like, story focus. In which case, like, the same people that thought Metal Gear Solid 4 was way too much story are going to be super pissed off that they're playing this game instead of MGS5's, you know, spiritual successor, which hasn't been made yet.
So, but from the reviews I've been reading of this game and listening to, the story doesn't pick up until the very, very end. And then the game completely flips itself on its head.
Let's not go any further into Death Stranding. I don't want to hear about no whales beaching themselves, okay?
Okay, I apologize. But yeah, so I hear that it's a walking simulator. And I saw walking simulator and... Man, since you mentioned Kiki's Delivery Service, I kind of low-key want to play Walking Simulator now. Thanks.
Dude, if you haven't played Firewatch, you should give that a shot. I think that's a pretty good walking simulator.
Oh, Firewatch is a good walking simulator.
Oh, you already played it? You should play Virginia, then.
I don't want to play Virginia.
You should play Proteus, then.
You should play... I'm trying to think of other... The disappearance...
Dear Esther.
The Vanishing of Ethan Carter is supposed to be a really good walking simulator.
Well, I don't really want a walking simulator. I want a package delivering simulator now, though.
Did you hear about the one, the game that's in development where you are a Japanese postal worker?
No, but this sounds like Papers, Please, and I'm excited.
Tiffany told me about this game, and I might not be able to find it anymore. A Japanese postal worker game.
Speaking of Japanese postal worker game, After Party came out, but it's not out on Switch yet, and that makes me sad.
Is After Party the game that's made by the Oxenfree team?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So, Inaka Project. Postal delivery game Inaka Project has you deliver exploring the Japanese countryside. By train, by motorbike, or on foot, you'll be able to explore this lovely place at your own pace and however you wish to do it. Little information on the game is available right now, but the developer has many short clips of the charming places you'll visit, as well as some of the people you can meet on their Twitter account. Inaka Project is currently in development, but you can follow its creation on the developer's Patreon. Anyways.
Ooh, it's 3D. This looks nice.
So just to verify, Scott, you didn't talk about The Outer Worlds last week, right?
I did talk about The Outer Worlds last week. Actually, we put a pretty big chunk of time into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, last week was very Outer Worlds-y.
And I'll have plenty more to say on The Outer Worlds probably the next time we record. But luckily, I didn't make much headway this week. So
hey, me neither.
Yeah, I didn't miss out on any opportunities to talk on it in the pod today. The Outer Worlds. Neil, if you haven't edited that episode, then you haven't heard me say, wow, it's nice to play a good Western RPG again.
Whoa, you say that after playing...
Divinity Original Sin, which is also a great Western RPG. So,
okay. I was going to say, you should have said, wow, it's great to play a good Bethesda game.
Absolutely. No, I think I may have actually said that in there.
I think you did
and
as well.
Yeah, I definitely, for you to appreciate, Neil... played a little bit of Skyrim before I picked up The Outer Worlds, and it's just like the night and day difference between those two games, and even looking at a dialogue interaction in Fallout 4, like, just, oh, it's very refreshing. It's very nice to see.
I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah,
maybe.
at least look into it. It's
Steam.
I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I didn't expect it to like be as delightful of an experience as it has been so far.
Slash, Neil, if you don't want to spend full price on it, literally just sign up for the Game Pass. I know you hate Xbox Game Store. Just sign up for Game Pass for $1.
Windows Store. Barf. We'll see. Okay. That's it for this episode. You can write us into podcast@fancyramen.com. Did you like how I interchangeably came or spoke at the same time there?
Yeah,
I interchangeably came.
Gross.
You can also check us out on Twitch at twitch.tv/fancyramentv/cookiescamilk/jfrayallday. Congratulations, Jay Frey, for getting married yesterday.
Congrats to John.
Until
next time,
leave a review and all that stuff.
Yeah, tell your friends about the podcast. I've been doing the legwork of telling folk about it. Why don't you go ahead and help me out and do some of that too?
Okay.
If I'm gonna bother with all the promotion, someone else can help me out.
Bye bye.
See you next week.